That is the scintillating beat of Ray Lynch's Clouds Below Your Knees. And that means it's 8 p.m. on a Thursday, and time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to stories and the art of telling them right here on KPFT 90.1 FM. Well, I'm your guest host tonight, Eric Heen, and I'm backed up by the talented team of Dr. Hank Rubicek, Warren Holloman, and Mary Edgerton, as well as Greg Audell. And our guest hosts are Harwood Taylor, Chris Gorman, and Paul Topekian. And our engineer and media maven is Tatiana Gago. And here we celebrate the power of story, like the stories people have been telling around campfires since prehistoric times. We keep that tradition alive by featuring special guests every week who'll share tales that not only entertain us, but inspire us as well. Well, like a lot of people my age, while I was growing up, most of my exposure to Native American culture came from Western movies. The Native Americans, of course, were always the savages, and the white guys, like John Wayne, of course, were always the upright heroes. Nowadays, we realize that those old depictions of Native Americans were way off the mark. And tonight, we have three accomplished Native American storytellers who can help put some of those misperceptions to rest. Amy Blumel from the Chickasaw Nation, Chin of the Nangasets, and Chugi Kingfisher of the Cherokee Nation. So let's get to our stories. Our first guest tonight is Amy Blumel. Amy is a member of the Chickasaw Nation. She travels far and wide teaching about Southeastern Native culture. She educates through storytelling, through her art, and also through her work with an organization called Stomp Dance Chickasaw Hethla. Amy, welcome to So What's Your Story?
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited today about getting to share with you and be here.
Well, we're excited too. Well, tell me about this Chickasaw Stomp Dance. I got a feeling it's more than just pure entertainment. It's got some meaning.
Yeah, you know, stomp dance is one of the oldest dances done on this continent. And originally, stomp dance was prayer. It was done to talk to Creator. And the way it's done is you light a fire, and it's at night, and the smoke carries your prayer up. Ah. And the men chant, and the women shake shells that we wear on our legs that are filled with rocks. And so we keep the beat while the men sing or speak.
Right. I saw a few of those on YouTube. They're fascinating.
Yeah.
And you're a storyteller. So your first story, I understand, is a migration story?
Yes, sir. It's one of our oldest stories. It sets up how our tribe became our tribe. And I'll go ahead and start it.
The stage is yours.
In the beginning, we were Hatak Noa, people walking. We were walking away from disease and pestilence and famine. We walked away looking for a new home, an Anchuka, a Boa. We were walking. We walked for many years, and we walked behind two brothers, twins, Chikasha and Chata. They led us, and as we walked behind a sacred pole, a gift from Abba Banili, the Creator. Now, the pole, it was a gift from Creator, and every night when the people stopped, they would plant this pole in the ground. And the pole in the morning would point the direction that the people were supposed to continue. And it always pointed east. And the people would begin walking each morning. We also walked behind Ofi Tobi, the white dog. He was also a gift from Creator. And the white dog was a scout for us. And it would run ahead and make sure everything was fine. It protected us. If someone got bitten by Senti, if a snake bit them, Ofi Tobi could lick the wound and it would heal. And we began our journey. We walked for a very, very long time. And if we got to a point where we needed supplies or to gather food or to hunt, the pole would stay erect. And it would stay erect for a while, and the people would go out and gather, and the men would hunt. And we would get all the things that we needed. But eventually the pole would begin to point, and it would begin to lean, and it would point east, and we began walking again. And we walked for a long, long time until we came to a mighty river, a huge river. And we called this river Misa Sapokni. Now, Europeans would come later, and they would ask us, what do you call this river? And we would say, Misa Sapokni. Sapokni means old, and Misa means older than time. And we said, Misa Sapokni. And they said, Mississippi. And it's been Mississippi ever since.
Uh-huh.
But as we reached Misa Sapokni, the pole pointed across. So the people began to make dugouts and rafts and anything they could to take these thousands of people across this river. And eventually we got everything done. We got everything loaded and we got all the people across. And when we turned and looked back, Ofi Tobi stood on the other side. He had waited for the last person to board. And he jumped into the water and began to swim across to us. But he was caught up in the waves and the water and the currents. And he was swept away and we lost him. But the Chickasha people know that if you go there at night and you listen, you can hear him, for he is still with us and he still protects us. Now, the next morning when the people awoke, the pole did something it had never done before. The pole began to vibrate and it began to go back and forth and it began to shake and go into circles and it wouldn't point a direction and it didn't stand still. And the people were very confused because they had never seen anything like this. And they began to discuss what this meant. And the one brother, Chata, said, it means we're home. We should stay. This is it. We've found it. But the other brother, Chikasha, said, no, this is a sign that we must leave, and we must leave now. It was no time to waste. We need to go. Well, the tribe could come to no consensus, and there had to be a consensus. So it was finally decided that anyone who agreed with Chata would stay, and that anyone who believed as Chikasha did should leave with him. And so the tribe was broken apart, and some of the people went with Chikasha, and those people would later become the Chickasaw people. And the people that stayed with Chata would become the Choctaw people. And that is why to this day we share our language.
Ah, yeah.
Because we started as one.
Wow. I like how your stories are very vivid. You can see the pole shaking and the river and everything.
Well, thank you. That's a great compliment, because that's what you want to do. You want to implant an image, because if you implant that image, that knowledge will stay with the person longer.
Yes. Well, Amy, let's hear your next story.
This is one of my favorite. I really enjoy Chukfi stories, rabbit stories, because for people of the Southeast, the Muskogean people, we understood trickster to be rabbit. And it's so interesting, because if you travel across the world, everybody has a trickster. In Native Americans, if you're on the Pacific coast, you've got raven. If you in the Southwest, you have coyote. There's otter for people on the East Coast. So everybody has a trickster. And ours, of course, is Chukfi. It's the rabbit. And this story talks about rabbit was going through the woods. And as he was traveling through the woods, he saw something he had never seen before. He saw these tracks. And as he sat and he stared at these tracks and he looked at them, he thought, there's no claws, just big, fluffy looking tracks. There's no hoofs. There's nothing sharp. This creature can't even protect himself. And he began to get very curious about who was this creature. So he begins to track him and he follows him through the woods. And as he gets closer and closer, in his mind's eye, he starts to imagine who this creature is. And if you have no claws and you have no hoofs, you must not be very tough. If you're just walking around with big fluffy feet, I mean, anybody could beat you up and win a fight with you. And so Chukfi, in his mind's eye, he begins to see himself as this big, brawny, strong creature that when he found this soft-footed creature, he was just going to challenge him to a fight immediately, and he was going to whip him. And in his mind's eye, his little claws on his foot began to get really, really long, and his teeth became sharper, and he became muscular. And as he comes out, and he comes to a clearing, and there's water, sleeping on a stone by the water's edge is Kowi Imithla. Now, Kowi Imithla is the wildcat, and he had curled up in the sun, and he had his eyes closed, and Chukfi yelled at him, "Hey, you!" And the wildcat opened one eye and he said, "Nanta, nanta chibana, what do you want?" And Chukfi said, "Minty, come on down here. This is my house, my woods, my water. And if you want to stay here, you've got to come down here. I'm going to challenge you to a game of scratch." And the wildcat opened his eyes and he stretched and he came down off that rock. And he stood in front of Rabbit and he said, "You want to challenge me to a game of scratch?" "Yeah, I'm going to fight you. I'm going first." And the wildcat said, "Fine." So Chukfi, he closed his eyes and he reared back with his paw. And in his mind's eye, those little tiny claws went from being just a quarter of an inch to 6 feet long. And they were sharp and they were deadly. They were daggers and spears. And he pulled that arm back and he swung as hard as he could and he hit that wildcat. And when he hit that wildcat in Chukfi's mind's eye, he could see those claws and he could see dangling off the claws blood and an eyeball and a whisker and some intestine. Oh, it was just horrible, the mess that was hanging off of his paw. But the reality is when he opened his eye and he stared at his paw, his claws were not 6 feet long. They were tiny and there wasn't one hair off of that wildcat. And at that point, the wildcat looked at him and with a grin, he said, "My turn." And he picked up that big, soft, fluffy paw. And right as he went to swing, all of the claws came out of the paw. And Chukfi had never seen an animal who could do this. So Chukfi, terrified, went to jump. And at the time, Chukfi's tail was long and stringy like hair. Looked almost like a horse's tail. Well, that wildcat swung. And when he swung, he caught that hair and popped it right off. And to this day, if you see Chukfi and any of his children, they have a little tiny tail that goes poof. There's a little fuzzball because of a game of scratch with a wildcat.
Ah, yes. I've noticed there's a lot of those stories where the end says something like, "And that is why to this very day, bears don't have it." There's this one my mother told me as a child where the bear sat on a frozen pond with his tail in an ice hole in the water. Mm-hmm. It froze off. And in the end, it said, "And that is why, to this very day, bears do not have tails."
That's an Aesop's fable, I believe. It's a really old Greek tale. And it is.
Now, your next story, Amy, is called, is it Cornhusk Doll?
The Cornhusk Woman. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the interesting thing about this story is, as a child, when I went to school, and I guess I was in third, fourth grade, something like that. I come bouncing home from school and I'm so excited. And I tell my mother, I'm like, "Oh, mom, we learned about the pioneers and they made these dolls and I got to make one." And so I show her this little raggedy little cornhusk doll. And I'm just so excited. And my mother stopped me and she said, "They didn't invent those dolls." And I said, "Well, what? But yes, they did. The teacher said," and she said, no. "Who bred corn? Who developed corn?" I said, "Well, I don't know." And she said, "We made corn. Native people made corn." And she said, "And we also made the cornhusk doll." And that's when she told me the story of the cornhusk woman. Now, as Native societies were set up, the women were responsible for a lot of things. So if you came to my village, I would be responsible for my house, for furnishing the house, for all of the garden, all of the farming was done by raising the children. I also had to do the clothing and things like that. And not that men didn't help. Men did help, but men had to go hunt. And that meant trips where they would be away. And men had other things that they had to attend to. So women handled a lot of the responsibility of everyday life, as a lot of times, you know, we still do. But so these women were working all the time. And one of the problems was that when you had children, children get bored. And bored children get into trouble. And so the children, as the women would put them one place or the other, and they would go to working in the fields, the children would get bored and you would hear them wander off into the woods and you would hear one calling for the mother and one was hurt and one scraped their knee and two were in a fight and one was hungry and they would cry. And all the work had to stop as the women had to go and find these little children and bring them back. And you sit here and you stop touching him and you, hey, pay attention, stop doing that, come over here. And it went on like this over and over and over, until the women weren't getting anything done. And the women finally called out to Abba Banili. They called out to Creator. And they said, "Abba Banili, you have to help us. You have to send help for these children because we're not going to have food for the winter." And so Creator looked at all of the things he created, all of his things that he had made, and he saw corn. And he called out to Sister Corn and he said, "Is there any way that you can think of to help these women. The corn was so excited that Creator had called upon her. She said, yes, yes. And she immediately went to work and she began to shed the husk. And as she pulled the husk back, she shaped it into a beautiful, beautiful, tall woman. And this woman was just gorgeous. And she walked from village to village calling to the children, Minti, Minti, Tushwa, come, come quick. We're going to Hitla. We'll dance. And Toloa, we will sing. And she would entertain them. And so she gathered up all the kids and she began to do great work. And the women got back to work in the fields and things got done. And the woman taught them songs and they had a great time until she took them swimming. And as they went down to the oka, to the water, and she saw herself in the water. Oh, she had no idea how beautiful she was. And she sat and she looked and she made the children sit around in a circle. And she was like, do you see how beautiful I am? And the children, okay, you know, they agreed, but they were children. They wanted to go do things. She said, no, you sit here and tell me you're so beautiful. Oh, tell me I'm gorgeous. And she made the children do this. And soon the children got bored. And bored children get into trouble. And they wandered away from her and they went into the woods and they got lost and they got hungry and they got scared and they got into fights and they called for their mothers. And the mothers had to stop all their work and they would wander into the woods and pull everybody back out and feed this one and handle this one and make sure this one was okay. And you stop crying and you come here. And this went on for days. And again, the women, they were very frustrated and they called out. They said, Abba, Banili. At first she was wonderful, but now she does nothing. She creates even more work for us. Can you help us? And Creator, he goes and he finds the woman sitting by the water and he calls to her and he says, listen, what you're worried about the outside, that's not it. It's the inside. It's what's in your heart. It's how you are with people and children and family. And the outside will grow old. It will change, but it's the inside. And you must pay attention to this. And the woman understood, and she agreed, and she went back to the children, calling them, Minti, Minti, Tushpa, come quick, come quick. And they began to dance again and sing, and things were good. And everything was great until she took them swimming again. And once they got to the water, she could not stop looking at herself. She couldn't get away from the water, and she began to call the children, Minti, Minti, come and look at me, Pisa, am I not beautiful? Tell me I'm beautiful. And she made the children, you're so beautiful. Well, the children got bored, and bored children get into trouble. And they wandered away. They went back into the woods, and they got lost, and they got hungry, and they got tired, and they got scared, and they called their mothers. And this went on for days. And finally, the women called out again, Abba, Banili, this is not working. Can you help us? And Abba, Banili, he looked and he saw her sitting there by the water. And he had spoken to her once. So he went to Katini, the great horned owl. And he said to the owl, you must teach her a lesson. She doesn't hear me. And the owl watched her. And as she stared into the water, Owl lifted off the branch, and with his large wings and silent feathers, he swooped across the water. And when he got right above her reflection, with his claws, he snatched her reflection, and he flew away with it. And she sat looking into the water, seeing nothing. And when this happened, all of her features began to go flat. Her face began to go flat, and she began to shrink down, 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 until finally she was no bigger than a foot tall. And with no features, she would not be sidetracked, and the children could keep her with them forever, and she would always love the children. And that's the story of Corn Husk Woman.
Ah, yes. Corn Husk Woman. I love that one. Well, Amy, I loved all your stories tonight. I understand you have a website maybe you could tell us so we can have access to some of your work.
Yeah, my website is Texas Teller, T-E-X-A-S, like the state, and then Teller, like storyteller, T-E-L-L-E-R, TexasTeller.com, and that'll take you to my website. If you're on Facebook, I'm Amy Blumel, Native Storyteller.
Okay, Amy, do you got any parting thoughts for our listeners? Just anything to leave us with, any words of wisdom?
Yeah, you know, I think First of all, it's important to recognize our history. So if you are living in a state, know the people that were there before you. I think that's always important. So many times we're not shown that history. And the other thing is, these are very trying times right now. And I think the cornstalk woman speaks to all of us. Yeah. It's not what's on the outside. It's not, you know, how you look or who you associate with. It's what's on the inside. It's and we need to carry that message with us more often.
It is a great pandemic story.
Yeah.
And thanks again, Amy, and thanks for all you contribute to the community.
Thank you so much, Chokmashki. You know, Chickasaws don't have a word for goodbye. We literally say Chapisa Lacho, which if you say that, I'm saying I will see you. So I will see you. We will meet again. Chapisa Lacho. Chapisa Lacho.
Chapisa Lacho.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And it means we will see each other. So I thank you and Chapisa Lacho.
Thank you very much. Well, that was Amy Blumel. What a fantastic storyteller. And our next guest, his name is Chin, T-C-H-I-N, Chin. Chin is an internationally known artist, originally from Virginia. He now resides in New Jersey with his wife, and they have 4 daughters and 10 grandkids. Chin is an accomplished metalsmith, author, flute maker, educator, folklorist, musician, and clothes maker. Chin, it's great to have you here on So What's Your Story?
Hi, Eric. Thank you so very much for inviting me.
You bet. Now, your name, Chin, is that your full name? Is just the one name, Chin?
Yeah, I go by the one name, Chin. It's a professional name. I wasn't born with that name. My mother had always called me Chin as a nickname. And so growing up, not only did my mother call me that, but then all my friends and everybody.
Okay.
So I use that as my name.
Chin, can you give me kind of a brief introduction of your background, the tribe you belong to?
Yes. I'm part Sasika and Nahagansett. The Nahagansett people are in southern New England. The Sasika people are up in Canada, in Alberta, in that area. But I'm more affiliated with the Nahagansett people. I'm an East Coast person, more so. I was born and raised in this area of the Northeast.
Well, let's get right to your stories here, Chin. I guess your first story is called Little White Flowers.
Yeah, Little White Flowers. This is a traditional native story, Northeastern story, Narragansett in particular. It's about my relatives. This story is based on my family, and it's about my greatest-great-grandfather and my greatest-great-grandmother. Long in the way time, past time, when the earth was young and there were only native people living here. Well, my greatest-great-grandfather and greatest-great-grandmother, they were young and had just gotten married, and they lived on the outside of the village. They didn't have the age and wisdom that it takes to live in the center, and they were happy because they were newlyweds and living on the edge of the village. Well, one day, my greatest-great-grandfather and my greatest-great-grandmother were talking about something, and that talk became a rather interesting discussion, and that discussion got a little deep, and then it got a little heated, and it became a disagreement, and then the disagreement turned into an argument. And so that evening time, my greatest-great-grandmother said to my greatest-great-grandfather while they were arguing, you know, I no longer want to participate in this argument. I'm going out for a walk. I'm going out to cool off. And my greatest-great-grandfather said, fine, that's great. Go ahead. And she went off for a walk to cool off. And the sun had set, and she had not come back. And now, even though they argued, my greatest-great-grandfather was very concerned about why his wife did not come back. And he started pacing back and forth. He wanted to go look for her, but it was nighttime. And even you know yourselves that it is not good for human beings to be out in the woods walking around in the nighttime. And so he paced back and forth, wondering where she went and did she leave him for good. And as soon as the dawn started to rise and the light started to appear in the sky, he ran out of the house to see if he could go find her. And he went up and down different paths to look for her. He even asked the few hunters that were out early in the morning, had they seen her? And no one, and not him, could not find her. So as he was walking back home, disheartened, he saw a little path of little white flowers. He said, you know, I'm going to follow that path of little white flowers. I didn't take that one. Let me see where it leads me. And it led him to a field covered with little white flowers. And as he stood there in awe of all of these little white flowers that he had never seen in his life before, he noticed a rather interesting shaped rock out there in the middle of the field. And as he was looking at it really good, he said, "Oh, it's a deer. It's not a rock." And as he was looking at the deer in the middle of the fields, he realized it wasn't a deer either. It was his wife. And he ran over to her with great joy in his heart to see her there, but very concerned that she might be hurt lying down there in the field, this field covered with little white flowers. And he bent down and he touched her and he said, "Oh, my dear, my darling, please be safe. I am so sorry of what happened." When she felt his hand, she turned and looked up at him, and the tears came to her eyes and they rolled down her face. And when the tears rolled down her face and touched the ground, a little white flower appeared. "Oh," he said, "come, let's go home and resume our life and promise never to ever let a talk or disagreement to get this far again, where we would be so angry with each other that we would leave." And they went home, and that promise stayed with them. And my greatest great grandfather, he watched those little white flowers that springtime, and a very miraculous thing happened. Those little white flowers turned into little red heart-shaped berries. My greatest great grandfather, he bent down and he picked up one of those little heart-shaped berries and he tasted it. And he tasted the bittersweet taste of my greatest great grandmother's tears. Now, you know what I have just told you is true, as we Native American people believe it to be so. Because even today, you can prove the truth of this lesson to yourselves today. Because today, they have a special name that they call those little red heart-shaped berries that come from the white flowers, that come from the tears of my greatest great-grandmother. Today, they call those little red heart-shaped berries strawberries. And now, you know where strawberries come from.
Oh, I love it. That's great, Chin. I love that.
Yeah, and we have back up here in the Northeast, we have strawberry festivals. We have many holidays up here. Most of it surrounds about harvesting food, and we have a strawberry festival, and we always tell that lesson during the strawberry festival time. When I'm on stage and I'm acting it out, I bend down on the stage, I pretend to be the grandmother, I create a white flower that comes from my eye and roll down my face.
Wow.
And then I bring a sleight of hand, I bring a strawberry. The use of sleight of hand among traditional Native people is rather old. I learned it from our people to do that.
Yeah, I've seen some of your videos. They're great. The way you incorporate not only magic tricks, but music.
Yes.
And
yes.
You make flutes.
Yeah. I make traditional Native American flutes and play them and have recordings. I have about 5 recordings of.
You make quite a variety of flutes. I saw in one of your videos, and there's one, a nose flute. You actually play it through your nose. And what struck me when I was watching that video is you could sort of hum along while you're playing, and it creates this sort of hauntingly beautiful sound.
Right. Well, the interesting thing, I was gifted a nose flute some 40 years ago, and the person who gave it to me says, "I have no idea what it is and how to do it, but I would like to give it to you and figure it out." And it took me a long time, in fact, years.
Really?
To figure it out. I had no one I could go to, and it was very hard to find information about the nose flute here in Native culture. But I taught myself how to play it. And the interesting thing is I was doing a program in Santa Fe, New Mexico, one year, and a lady, after I finished my performance, came up to me with tears in her eyes, and she said, "Oh, thank you so very much. When I go back to my reservation," she lived in Warm Springs, Oregon, "I have to tell the people that the nose flute is true, because in one of the anthropological books, it talked about these people having a nose flute." And they go, "Oh, no, we didn't, because the information was lost." So they said, "Nah, that must be lies from these anthropologists saying that." And she said, "But I can go back and tell them it's not a lie, it's true."
Right. Well, speaking of flutes, your next story is called The Flute Story. Don't flutes have some kind of significant relevance in like courtship rituals?
Yes. Well, yes, it is. And so in traditional Native American culture, young men and young women are not allowed to be alone together.
Ah.
You know, if a young woman was to go somewhere, she would always be accompanied. She would have a chaperone, no matter who, her uncles, her aunts, her sisters, brothers, she would always have a chaperone. So at the right time of the year, when the moon is in the sky in the proper place, the adults say, well, this is the time we should have the courtship ritual of the dance and have all the young people of marriageable age come together. And they would hold a hoop. A boy and a girl wouldn't be able to hold each other. So they would put their hand through a hoop and they would dance around and they would switch partners. And they would this way, they would get to meet each other. As they were doing this dance, they noticed that there were one couple that didn't change partners. And they even heard some of the conversation. And the young lady says, you know, in the daytime, I work in my mother's fields. And the young man was saying how his uncle was teaching him how to play the flute. And she said, well, one day, maybe why don't you come down by the fields and play the flute sometimes while I'm there? So the very next day he ran down, he brought his flute with him down by the fields where there was a stream, and he took his flute out and he played this song. And the people working in the fields, they said, listen to that sound blowing through the trees. I wonder what it is. And the young lady, she knew that it was that young man who had come down to play his flute song for her. And it made her so very happy that he would do that. And she wanted to send him a message to let him know that she heard it. And so she went over to the tree and she asked the tree for a leaf. And receiving this gift of a leaf, she put it in the stream. And the stream took the message of the leaf down to that young man. And the young man, seeing it, made himself so very happy to know that she would send that message. And every day he would go down to the stream while the women folk were planting, and he would play the song. And the people would say, listen to that sound blowing through the trees. I wonder what it is. And of course the young lady knew it was him. And again, she would go to the tree and ask for a leaf. And receiving that gift, she would put it in the stream again. And day after day, these young people had this communication with each other. And their love grew strong. And after many days and weeks, the uncle of that young man came to him and said, young man, it is time that you stop fooling around down by the river and by the women folk and learn how to make a living. And I'm going to take you out and teach you how to hunt. And the young man was so very excited about this idea of learning how to make a living, because if he knew how to make a living, he could get married, and he knew with whom he wished to marry. And so he went off with great expectations to go and with his uncle to learn how to make a living, to learn how to hunt. And day after day, the young lady was working in the fields, and she didn't hear the young man playing his flute anymore. And she was wondering how come he wasn't playing the flute. And she thought about all kinds of ideas. Maybe he was too busy. He was helping the older people, his aunts, his uncles. He had other important things to do than to play the flute for her. But as the days turned into weeks and the weeks turned into months, she exhausted all of the ideas of why he was no longer playing his flute for her. But she did come up with this one idea. And the reason why he wasn't playing his flute for her, she thought, was that he must be playing it for someone else. And when that idea came to her mind, it hurt her so great. It made her so sad and so sick. She fell to the ground. And her parents called to all the medicine people that they could afford to help to heal her. But even in those days, people did not know how to heal a broken heart. And she faded away. After many months, the young man came back, very much a new young man with a few hairs on his face and muscles and a great outlook on life. He knew how to make a living, and he knew with whom he wanted to marry, because he could make a living and feed them. And as he was going down to the stream to play his flute for her, there was no leaf that came back. So he said, I'll go back and unload my horse. And as he was walking back to the village, he met the brother of that young lady. They spoke about all kinds of things, about all the things that the young man learned. The young man asked the brother, how's your sister? And when the brother heard about the name of his sister, it saddened him so much that he bowed his head and he said to the young flute player, I guess you have been gone a long time, because they placed her up there in the rocks. Mm-hmm. And the young flute player, when he heard what happened to that young lady and that she had faded away, the pain struck him in the heart so great that he fell to his knees and the tears came to his eyes. And the young brother said, get up, get up. And the young flute player said, oh, please, please, please take me to where they placed her. And the young brother took the young flute player up there into the rocks, and he left him there, never to ever see him again. But the young flute player, he took out his flute and he played this song. You know, they never saw that young flute player ever again. But a very miraculous thing happened. Because love is strong and love is powerful and true love is everlasting. And as that young flute player played his flute, all the leaves on all the trees started to fall. And now you know what I have just told you is true, as we Native people believe it to be so. And you can prove the truth of this to yourselves any October or November time. You can go outside and you can see that all the leaves on all the trees are starting to fall. And that is all.
Wow. See, and that was mesmerizing. I love that. We had the nature there again.
Yes, of course. Yes.
Yes. Maybe we should go back to the outdoor life.
Oh, it would be better for all of us. We would learn to appreciate the environment.
I think you're right. Well, Chin, you really bring these stories to life, and I appreciate you sharing them with us this evening. Could you ease us on out of this segment with some of that flute music?
Definitely. And Eric, thank you so very much. I really enjoyed myself, and here is a song.
We're going to take a break from our stories here for station identification and to make a few announcements. You're listening to So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. And here's what's going on in the world of storytelling in the Houston area. First of all, our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild. They're at houstonstorytellers.org, and they meet the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m., and until the pandemic is over, they'll be meeting on Zoom conferences. And while you're on that same site, click on the title Radio Program, and you'll see our archived episodes of So What's Your Story, dating all the way back to 2008. And remember, you can live stream us every Thursday at 8 p.m. on kpft.org. We have a So What's Your Story Facebook page, and we're on YouTube. So don't forget to like us and share us when you visit us online. Also, we're a very interactive program. So if you have any suggestions or comments or requests for guests, drop us an email at story@kpft.org. And don't forget our friends at The Moth, who have monthly story slams. Usually, they're at Warehouse Live, but during the pandemic, they're featuring some great virtual story slams. So check them out at themoth.org or at the Moth in Houston Facebook page. And to take your storytelling skills to the next level, why not join the Tejas Storytelling Association or the National Storytelling Network? Okay, let's get back to our storytellers. Tonight we're hearing from three fine Native American tellers. Well, our next storyteller will be Chugi Kingfisher. Chugi travels the world educating and entertaining folks with his stories. And in 2019, Chugi received the honor of Cherokee National Treasure. Chugi, it's great to have you here with us on So What's Your Story?
Thank you very much for having me here this evening. My name is Chugi Kingfisher. I'm from Tahlequah, Oklahoma. I'm a full-blood Catoosa Cherokee. I've got a few stories here that have been on my mind, and as I was getting prepared for this, I asked my wife, I said, what should I tell? She said, tell the one that your mama didn't like.
Yeah, that's what I want to hear.
I said, that sounds like a good one. And so I'll start off with that one. Now, understand that even though I say these are Kituwa Cherokee stories, they don't belong just to Cherokee. You're going to find that stories link all nations, it seems. Maybe just one small thread ties us together here, there, and that thread seems to be a story. The story says that a long time ago, Jistu, the trickster rabbit, he was walking down the path, and he was enjoying the day, enjoying the breeze as he was walking along, and then he came to a large open field, and in that large open field, there he saw tobaccos in all state, hanging over tree limbs, drying out, and oh, the aroma was just so intoxicating. He just wanted to reach up and grab a leaf and roll it into a big cigar and just sit back, but he knew he had things to do. And so he said to himself, later, I'll get it later. As he continued down the path, he was thinking about things and just how blessed he really was. And as he came around the corner, there was a church. He was like, wow, thank you, Lord. You knew that I needed to give thanks, and so you provided this church for me. And today is Sunday. Today is a day of worship, so what better time than now? And so Rabbit, he dusted himself off just a little bit, and he moseyed up to the front step. Now, it was an old one-room building, and when you stepped on the step, every step made a sound. And so the rabbit, he stepped upon that step, and you could hear it creak. He stepped up one more step, and he was level with the door. And he began to think to himself, I wonder whose church this is. He kept looking around to get some kind of clue of who was attending church here. You see, as he began to look around, he noticed that there were scratching posts. He noticed there were this and that, and he realized he was at the church of the dogs. He said, but today is Sunday. Today is a day of worship, so everything's going to be all right. So with the lump in his throat, the rabbit, he reached out and grabbed the handle of the church door, turned it just the slightest little bit, trying to not make any noise. But like all old doorknobs, it began to creak. He opened it up, and the door creaked even louder. And as he walked into the church, all he saw were white eyeballs looking at him. He tried to swallow as hard as he could, and as he began to look around and as his eyes began to adjust, he noticed that on the back wall, there was a board with nails on it. There was one on the left side and one on the right side, and so dogs would simply take off their tails and hang them up so that they could be seated a little more comfortable. As Rabbit began to look, he noticed, oh, there were skinny tails and fluffy tails, long tails and short tails, browns, blacks, blondes, and whites. He saw a small area at the end of a bench, and he sat down, and he scooted over just a little bit, and that caused the dog next to him to scoot over, to scoot over, to scoot over, to scoot over till the one next to the wall seemed quite crowded, and returned the scoot all the way back to Rabbit, which pushed him out onto the floor. Rabbit was very upset as he got up. He said, all I want to do is go to church. He went up one more aisle and again found a small space and sat down and all the way over to the wall and all the way back. And he fell out on the floor again. Happened several more times before Rabbit finally got up and said, this is ridiculous. All I want to do is go to church and I can't even do that. And as he was getting ready to sit down at the front of the pew, the dogs begin to growl. Rabbit said, okay, I get the point. He stormed out of the church. As he was walking down the path, Rabbit was one of those kind of individuals that when something was done to him, he had to get them back. He had to teach them a lesson. And so as he was trying to scheme up a plan, he came to the tobacco plant patch. And there he began to smile. He reached up and grabbed the biggest, largest leaf that he could find and rolled it into a big cigar and began to smile. He took it back there to the church and he sat on the front step. He lit it up and he took a big draw. Oh, the smoke came billowing out. And Rabbit said, oh, this is going to work just fine. He took another big old draw on it and this time blew it underneath that front door. You see, there were no such things as door seals. And so at the bottom of that door, there was a 3-inch crack. Rabbit would take puff after puff and blow it underneath that door. Pretty soon, you could hear the dogs begin to cough. He took a couple more draws, and he blew it underneath that door sill. And he could hear the dogs begin to cough even more. And he said, ah, now is the time. He stood up and dusted himself off, threw the cigar to the side, grabbed that door handle, and flung it open. When he flung it open, he yelled, the church is on fire! And all the dogs, wild-eyed, took off running out of the door, grabbing a tail as they were leaving, running this way and that way, all the while Rabbit stood there smiling, knowing that he had taught them a lesson. Now, many people would disagree that this story is true or not, but I beg to differ. You see, whenever two dogs will meet each other, they will sniff each other's tails, and you can almost hear them say, hey, do you have my tail? At least that's the way the story was told to me.
I love it, Chuji. I love that. So that is why dogs sniff each other's butts.
Yeah.
I always wondered about that. Now, do you have, let's hear your next story here.
When I started doing storytelling, the one thing I kept in the back of my mind was the animal stories. You see, we grow up, even today. We grow up with animal stories because those animal stories, they help answer the simplest questions, and that's why. And so with that being said, I want to share an animal story with you.
Sure.
And it says that a long time ago in this big, beautiful pond, there lived three best friends. And these three best friends, their names were Sailor Googie the turtle, Ajot the fish, and Walosi the frog. Now, in this big, beautiful pond, these three best friends, they would play all day, and they would play hide and seek and tag and any other game that the mind could comprehend or come up with at that time. And every time these three best friends would play, they would lose, say to Googie. They would look all over that pond, and eventually they would go back to his home, and there sits Sailor Googie, that crazy turtle, on his log, looking up into the sky. They went to him and said, Sailor Googie, why are you sitting on that log looking into the sky? Sailor Googie, as he stared off into the distance, he said, have you ever noticed how beautiful the sky is? Have you ever noticed how beautiful those birds are? Oh, imagine there must be more than just our big, beautiful pond. He said, if I was a bird, I would fly off and I would visit all these other places. Oh, if only I could fly. And they would look at him and say, Sailor Googie, you are a turtle. You have no wings. You have no feathers. You are a turtle. Be a turtle. Okay, said Sailor Googie. And he would dive off of the log and swim off. Day after day, he would dream. He would sit on his log, and he would watch the birds fly over. One day, he was sitting there, and all of a sudden, a flock of geese came flying by. And he thought to himself, oh, if I was one of those geese, I would join in, and I would fly to the next pond. And just as he was wishing, those geese turned around and landed on his pond. Oh, my goodness, this was Sailor Googie's time. After they had all settled in, Sailor Googie dove into the water, and he began to swim around looking for the chief of the geese. And he bumped into an old auntie. She said, ah, nephew, what can I help you with today? He said, oh, I'm sorry, auntie. He said, I was looking for the chief, and I just happened to bump into you. I am so sorry. She said, well, maybe I can help you. Maybe I've got a little bit more knowledge. What is it that you need help with today, Sailor Googie? Sailor Googie, he began to get a little shy as he began to talk to the auntie. He said, I've had this dream for many, many years. He said that I want to be able to see other places. And I was hoping that maybe you could teach me how to fly. The goose, she began to laugh as she looked down at Sailor Goose. She said, oh, nephew, it hurts me to tell you this, but you will never fly. You see, you have no wings. You have no feathers. You are a turtle. You must remain a turtle. Sailor Googie hung his head and said, I thought that's what you might say. And so he swam off very disappointed. The next morning he got up and he was more determined than ever. You see, as he slept that night, he had a wonderful dream. And he was bound and determined to find the chief. He began to swim around and soon he came to the chief and said, sir, can I speak with you? Oh, it is Sailor Googie. Sailor Googie, I have heard about you already. I have heard of your quest to fly. He says, Sailor Googie, I am the chief of the geese. If anyone can teach anyone how to fly, it would be me. And I cannot teach you how to fly. You see, you have no wings. You have no feathers. And Sailor Googie said, wait, listen. I've been given a plan. Come. Come, Sailor Googie, and tell me your plan. And as they discussed, the chief, he began to nod his head. He began to laugh just a little bit. He began to agree, yes, yes, we can do that for you. Tomorrow, be at your log, and my men will help you to fly. Sailor Googie was very happy as he dove into the water, swimming around to all sections of it, telling everyone, tomorrow, Sonali, come, and I will show you. Sailor Googie is going to fly. Sailor Googie has no wings. He has no feathers. But Sailor Googie is going to fly. And everyone began to laugh. Oh, you silly little turtle. He said, come and see. The next morning, everyone was gathered around Sailor Googie's log. And there at the end of Sailor Googie's log stood Sailor Googie with the stick in his mouth, looking up into the air. Why is he standing there like that? What is he trying to do? And all of a sudden, the gust of wings took off. Two of the largest geese in that group turned around and reached down and picked Sailor Googie up by grabbing one end of the stick. There in the middle was Sailor Googie holding on. Sailor Googie was flying. Sailor Googie had no wings. He had no feathers. Yet there he was flying. Sailor Googie was enjoying himself as he was feeling the air underneath him. The exhilaration of being free as he looked over the mountain and saw another pond. And as he was thinking about that, gratitude also overcame him. He said, I forgot to tell these two fine gentlemen thank you for helping me make my dream come true. As he opened his mouth to say thank you, he let go of the stick and it began to tumble back to the earth. Over and over, he landed on the bank. They said that a long time ago, Sailor Googie's shell used to be smooth and shiny and as bright as the sun. When he landed upon the bank, that smooth, shiny surface shattered into many pieces. There lay Sailor Googie crying. Up in the mountains, there was Grandfather Wind, and he heard all this commotion going on down at the water. And as he came down out of the mountains to find out what was going on, there he saw his grandson, Sailor Googie, lying on the ground. Grandson, why are you lying there like that? Why aren't you home? Why aren't you playing with your friends? Sailor Googie told him what he had tried to do. Grandfather shook his head and said, Sailor Googie, you have no wings. You have no feathers. You are a turtle. You must be a turtle. Sailor Googie agreed that he would stop dreaming. Grandfather began to run around Sailor Googie, singing his medicine song, and Sailor Googie's shell came back together again, but it was never smooth like it once was. Today, you can still see his grandchildren. When you go to the lake or you go to the rivers or the streams, look very carefully. Because out on the end of those logs, you're going to see the grandchildren of Sailor Googie. And if you look very closely, you're going to notice something. You see, they're all looking up into the sky. Mm-hmm. And if you learn to listen with your heart as well as with your ears, you can hear Sailor Googie saying, "Oh, if only I could fly." At least that's the story that was told to me. Thank you.
Good story. It seems like animals really feature in Native American stories prominently. They're just everywhere.
Yeah, we relate to those more than anything. I can sit out in the woods and I can watch squirrels jump around and this and that and see features of a story as I begin to sit there. It's a wonderful thing. It really is just to sit and watch, and kind of like my fish tank. You know, I love sitting in front of my fish tank watching for hours, and my wife says, "I don't know what you get out of that." It's comforting just to watch, you know, and I can sit outside and watch squirrels jump around all day doing and have the same effect, you know.
Right. Well, Chuji, I really loved your stories tonight. They were all great. And I see why they called you the national treasure. You just kind of brighten up the place when you come around.
Well, I appreciate that, and I appreciate the invite. I've had a wonderful time here tonight, and if I'm ever in your area, stop by and say hi. You know, you never know where I'm going to pop up. So if I'm ever in your city, ever in your town, your school, come by and say hi. I would love to visit with you.
Oh, man, we'd love that, Chuji. The door's always open. Well, that's our show for tonight, and I'd like to thank our guests, Amy Blumel, Chuji Kingfisher, and Chin, for their stories that hopefully helped us to get a better understanding of Indigenous life. We're going to ease on out of here tonight with some more of Chin's flute music. This song is called Echoes of the Heart. And don't you dare move, because Lars is up next with a sweet mix of singer-songwriters on the Tennyson Tapes. Make 90.1 a part of your everyday life. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story, and treasure what you hear. This is Eric Keen, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we want you to always remember that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
Where freedom rings and singers sing, where Robert Earl Keen meets Martin Luther King. From jazz, justice, peace and rap, R&B, sports, blues and comedy. From heavy metal standing hand in hand with our chants. We shall not be silenced by fearmongers and sycophants. The place where your neighbor is on your airwaves, a true community. Celebrating diversity in thought, music, and love, where your stories are told in unison. The most loving words that we can say, and we say it so bold. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston. Welcome home.
Natural Awakenings is Houston's premier healthy living magazine. Locally produced, Natural Awakening's mission is to provide insights and information on natural health, nutrition, fitness, green living, and more. Each issue features articles written by nationally recognized authors